Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
That's right. It's time for Baptist Basics University. Once again, I'm Matthew Gage. This is the continuation of our series on the Book of Acts. This will be our 31st lesson in the series. We'll be in Acts chapter 25, carrying through the entire chapter today. And the title of our lesson is Paul and the Jews, Part 4. We have one more in kind of this little series of just Paul, you know, before the Jews, the Jewish rulers, the Roman rulers of the Jews and such. So before we begin his journey to Rome. And we're beginning to wrap up the book, which is kind of sad. I've actually finished up all the notes, I believe. I have them all finished. Probably there's little things I'll get going and see that I missed. But I've got my notes pretty much finalized for the final lessons. And we're planning on going on through with 35 lessons. So it's really sad to think we're down to the last five or so lessons. And what's been a little bit of a journey for us, and had a great time going through this book, and I love the Book of Acts. I love the history of it. I get sidetracked even the historical aspects of it, because it is just so amazingly done and so accurate, and the little details that you know from the different rulers to the places that are visited, just the magnificent detail that's given there, and that pales though in comparison to the story of the spread of the gospel and the foundation of the church, and as we've seen now, the church spreading throughout the Roman Empire. Just an amazing epic story that takes place in this, you know, this short 30-40 year period. It's just amazing, and I'm so tempted to just carry on and keep going into early church history, but I've got some other stuff to wrap up, some other ideas I want to get into, that may get into that some other time. But just I've had a great time going through this, and I don't know why I'm trying to wrap things up. We're still in lesson 31, so we still got a little ways to go. But just finishing up all the notes and stuff just really made me think, boy, this is we're so close to the end. And how I really hate to see this end. I hope that if you're listening to this, that you have the same feelings. Now, in our last lesson, we left Paul before the Roman procurator, something usually called governor, Felix. And that basically nothing happens. Paul is able to, you know, give defense, and Felix just basically pigeonholes any type of judgment in the matter. And for 2 years, Paul is kept prisoner in Caesarea. He's allowed some, maybe a little bit of liberty, but is still a prisoner, still kind of awaiting judgment, so he's really in this political and judicial limbo. Well, Felix, for whatever motive, which the author of Acts, Dr. Luke, seems to be that, you know, Felix was corrupt and wanted a bribe, which very well could be the case, and that fits in with the character painted by Josephus. But, whatever the reasons were, Paul is still a prisoner there. And we have now, in about the year 58 AD, about the year 60 AD. Now, once again, take my dates with a grain of salt, because I'm having some conflicts with them. But around, it's somewhere between 58 and 60 AD, somewhere in there, there is a new Roman procurator that is assigned to Judea. So Felix is now gone, and now we have a new man. His name is Porcius Festus, and we don't know a whole lot about him. We do know that he reigned somewhere 58 to 62 AD, somewhere in there. We know very little about this guy. We know quite a bit more about Felix. But basically just what happens in, you know, Josephus's works, and even that comparatively to some of the other Roman leaders at the time, there's not very much on this guy. We don't know a lot of backstory on him, at least comparatively to some of the other guys. So not a lot of cool stories or marriages or, you know, weird relationships or anything like that. This just the newest Roman guy. And he's going to have a problem. He's going to come in and inherit this problem of Paul. And basically it gets thrown at him as he just begins the job and the Jews want something done. Well, he wants to know what's going on and he wants to handle it. And he's trying to get in good with the Jews. He's trying to still establish himself, you know, in Rome's eyes. So he's trying to do what's right by all accounts. And in the middle of this, Paul is going to make a move that is still hotly debated today. In the midst of the trial, Paul is going to use his Roman citizen's right to appeal to Caesar. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But let's go ahead and begin. Chapter 25, verse 1. Now when Festus, and like I joked in the previous lesson, that's not the guy from, it's not Ken Curtis from Gunsmoke. This is a Roman leader. Usually nowadays you hear Festus and you think about, you know, the little backwoods mountain sheriff, you know, deputy sheriff on Gunsmoke, which actually is very funny when you look up King Curtis's career. He was actually a singer, very good singer, sang with the Sons of the Pioneers for a while, and, you know, was always the real handsome sort, and then he played that character. Anyway, regardless, how did I get off into that? Verse 1. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So he's just arrived, he's only been there a few days, been to Caesarea just a few days to kind of get stuff in order, get stuff going. He goes down to Jerusalem. Verse 2. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him. Verse 3. And desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. So he's met immediately by the Jewish leaders, and they start telling about Paul, and they're trying to set a trap for Paul. They're not wanting the Romans to deal with him. They want to deal with him. And evidently what they're wanting to do is have him transferred back and set an ambush and kill him. So, you know, that is their ultimate motive, is just to be done with Paul of Tarsus. But Festus, though, at least comparatively to some of the other Roman leaders, seems to, at least maybe because it's early on in his career, at least is going to try to do things right. In verse 4, and Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Verse 5, let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. So basically, you know, Festus is like, hey man, I just got on the job, I don't know what's going on, but I tell you what, when we get back to Caesarea, you guys come along and we'll figure this out. So verse 6, and when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, so he stayed in Jerusalem about 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. Verse 7, and when he was come, here we have basically another Roman trial. There's going to be accusations made, and, you know, Paul's going to get a chance to defend himself. So we have the Roman governor sitting on his judgment seat, you know, something kind of like a throne, that everybody before him, and they're going to try to, you know, figure this out in the Roman style. So verse 7, and when he was come, that's when Paul was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. So they're making all these accusations, you know, probably just, you know, off the wall crazy. You know, well, Paul's trying to overthrow the Roman government. I'm like, okay, really? You got any proof? Got witness? Well, no, but we heard he was, you know. When every accusation they made, when it came down to examining them on it or the proof of the burden of proof, you know, they could not prove their accusations. So verse 8, while he, that's Paul, answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. He's like, look, I'm innocent. Verse 9. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me?" So he's like, okay, if you haven't done anything, well, why not? Let's go back to Jerusalem and you can, you know, we can sort this stuff down there. And judged of, you know, before me. So basically, I'm going to oversee and make sure everything's done fairly. But, you know, would you be willing to go back and, you know, let's get this straightened out. Now, whether Paul knows about this plot for his life, which is probably quite evident, and I think basically he knows at this point that any trip back to Jerusalem means his life. He's going to do something here in verses 10 through 12, and that's going to trump even the Roman governor. Verse 10, then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as thou very well knowest." Verse 11, "For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar." Verse 12, then Festus, when he had conferred with the councils, basically calls together the lawyers and all his inner circle there, asked them what's going on. It says, then he answered, "Hast thou appealed unto Caesar?" Like, did we hear you right? And he says, "Okay, well, unto Caesar shalt thou go." So Paul, basically, what has happened? Let's talk a little bit about appealing to Caesar. This is something that was established in judicial. This isn't like an ancient Roman custom. This is something that, from what I've read, was established by Caesar Augustus. Somewhere probably in the earliest years of the first century, and basically Caesar Augustus changed many things and basically rewrote the whole book on Roman law, Roman procedure, and really set in motion the empire that went forward, and started to close the book on the Republic. Well, in some of the judicial reforms, he basically set up this idea of the appealing to Caesar, and basically what this is, it's a Roman citizen's right to have their case appealed to Caesar's court, not to Caesar personally, but to, you know, his bureaucracy, shall we put it that way. And basically what this was just like even in our American form of government, where we have, you know, an appeals process, where if you have a problem with your court case, you can appeal it to a higher court, and they can look at it and choose, you know, do we take this case? You know, is there merit to these claims? And if it is, they can rule on it. And then, you know, it can escalate all the way up to the Supreme Court. Well, basically what this does is basically escalate a local case all the way to the Supreme Court. And it was something that, as I say, every Roman citizen, which Paul was by birth, had a right to do. And this was a protection, a privilege for the Roman citizen to make sure they were not unfairly treated. Romans took citizenship very seriously, and they took protecting fellow citizens very seriously. And battles were fought over citizens being mistreated. And you read about the Roman, if you do any kind of study about the Roman Republic or the Roman Empire, especially during these early days before, citizenship was pretty much universal. The Roman citizens' rights were paramount to the Romans. So, why did Paul do this? There's some theories about this. That number one, he would not be this would be to avoid crucifixion. I find this pretty doubtful. Basically, because by appealing to Caesar, he cannot be crucified. He can only be beheaded. I don't see where that comes into play, that he's really worried about it it seems like they did not have a case against him that would escalate up to capital punishment. So I really doubt that that's possible. If anything, to avoid any type of death was to avoid any type of a assassination, shall we say, by the Jews. The second theory that I've seen is, you know, just to kind of get out of the judicial limbo that he's in. And basically, you know, he's been prisoner for 2 years and they haven't heard his case. What's to figure that Festus will treat him any differently than Felix? So, you know, why not escalate this and get a judgment on it? So that is fairly likely. I'm gonna classify it as probable. But I think the third theory is the best, that basically he knew he was supposed to take the gospel to Rome. And whether or not this was the plan as revealed to him by the Holy Spirit, that could be debated, I suppose. But I think Paul knew where he was supposed to end up. It's been quite clear that that he knew that it's already been revealed to him that he's supposed to go to Rome. And I think this was the chance that he saw, so he was going to take it. And just one other little side note, when appealing to Caesar in this case, who was Caesar at this time? That is Nero. So, yeah, you can go ahead and make your own speculation about how much fairness he would receive from that type of court. But the Caesar at this time is Nero. Okay, so Paul has appealed to Caesar. Festus says, okay, you appeal to Caesar? Well, fine, we'll send you to Caesar. You know, I'll wash my hands of you and we'll let Caesar deal with you. Now, what needs to happen for this process to take place is he needs to be sent, you know, as a prisoner under guard to Rome. But Festus, as the local official, it needs to send a report and basically, you know, tell what this man's accused of and what's happening. Well, as we can already tell, he has no idea what's happening. He's just got here. He's heard a bunch of serious accusations, none of which can be proven. So, you know, what's he supposed to do? Well, luckily, I suppose, for Festus, in is going to come another figure, and that is Agrippa, and we'll begin looking at that in verse 12. So, in verse 12, verse 13, and after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice, or Bernice, it's technically pronounced Bernice if you want to get really, crazy about pronunciations, came unto Caesarea to salute Festus. Okay, so let's look a little bit about who in the world is Agrippa and who in the world is Bernice. All right, well, this Agrippa is technically known to history as Agrippa the Second. His father, of course, Agrippa the First. All right, so his full Roman name is Marcus Julius Agrippa. He is the great-grandson of Herod the Great, so he's part of that Herodian line. He started ruling as a fairly young man, in his 20s, and ruled various areas around the Holy Land from beginning about 48 AD until he died, which was kind of debated evidently, but in the 90s AD up to maybe 100 something. But he's actually the kind of the hero for Josephus. When you read about him, Josephus just loves him and really kind of paints him out to be a hero. He's in this weird kind of situation where, because Rome was the power and his family was politicians, he has a Roman name. He was raised, quite a bit of the time in Rome. But nonetheless, because of the ties back to Palestine, he's actually, very well versed in the Jewish religion and, you know, in local affairs and stuff. And in fact, he actually has the kind of control over the high priest, the high priest's clothes, which is very interesting why that would be split up. It's very strange. So anyway, he's very well versed, not only just, you know, in like the Roman and Greek way of life, but also in the Jewish way of life. So, with him coming on the scene gives Festus a chance to kind of have an expert look at this, or what the Rome would consider an expert. The other interesting note on Agrippa is, a little bit more of a tabloid kind of thing, is that he was accused of having, shall we say, an incestuous relationship with his sister, which is Bernicke. And Bernicke is kind of an interesting person, too. She had been married before. I don't remember the exact details off the top of my head on her right now, but she had been married before, and shortly after this, you know, about 10 years later, when the Jewish revolt takes place and Vespasian and Titus come on the scene, she begins a relationship with Titus. And evidently, just short of being married, there was nothing. I mean, they were husband and wife, just without the official ceremony. That's the type of relationship that they had. He leaves her. Back when he returns to Rome, and when he becomes emperor a few years later, she actually goes back to Rome and, according to some accounts, was basically living as his wife, even though officially they were not married. But because of the tabloid-type nature of the relationship and the fear that the Romans had over the Eastern beguiling women, go back to, their thoughts on Cleopatra to get a sense of that. They did not like this relationship and basically forced her, forced Titus to send her back. And anyway, just the whole thing. When you get into any type of royalty and politics, especially the Roman politics, it basically turns into a big soap opera. And it's hard to sometimes even keep it G-rated. But look, there's no evidence really for her relationship with Agrippa, other than they were very close and were always together, and that kind of stuff did happen. Just read about the Ptolemies in Egypt, and stuff like that happened. So anyway, now that we've got them introduced, verse 14, when they had been there many days, so basically Agrippa has come to welcome the new Roman procurator, so after they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, there is a certain man left in bonds by Felix. Verse 15, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. Verse 16, to whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that which he is accused have he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Verse 17, therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I set on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth. Verse 18, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed. Verse 19, but had certain questions about him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. Verse 20, and because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. Verse 21, but when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. So, little side note there, it says Augustus. Augustus technically is a title, it's not a name. Caesar Augustus, the first true emperor of Rome, as we know it, Augustus was not his name, it was a title. You want to get technical, his name was either Octavian or Octavianus. So, Octavius, is something like that. It just depends on what time of his life you were going by. But so anyway, don't get confused. This isn't like a historical discrepancy. They're just going by going by the official title there. So basically what's happened in these verses is Festus just is, you know, laying out to Agrippa saying, hey, this is what happened. I came here, heard about this guy. I said, wait, not without a trial. We're not doing anything with this guy. And they came, had trial, and there really wasn't anything to accuse him of other than this petty religious stuff, you know, that they're squabbling over. And, you know, I really don't know what to do, but he appealed to Caesar. So, verse 22, then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. So, on the next day, you know, Festus says, hey, I'll take a look at him. So Festus is like, okay, great. Tomorrow, you'll get to hear him, Agrippa. So, verse 23, through the end of the chapter, we have Paul before King Agrippa. So, verse 23, and on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and was entered into the palace of hearing with the chief captains and principal men of the city at Festus's commandment, Paul was brought forth. And imagine, this is must be like a showpiece thing going on, you know. Talks about great pomp. The previous was just a little criminal case, and now this seems to be the event of the town. Everybody seems to be there. Verse 24. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us. Can't you hear the classic Rome, you know, the friends, Romans, lend me your ears, you know, that kind of thing. You can see the bigness of this. All the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him. So basically, it's like, look, they all want him dead, and I don't see any cause for him to die, but he's appealed to Caesar, and I'm going to send him. Verse 26, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my lord. That's talking, you know, I don't have anything to report unto my bosses in Rome, to Caesar. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and specially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. So there's the whole purpose of this. This is just kind of a fact-finding hearing. I'm drawing a blank on, you know, the kind of the American legal system equivalent of this. But basically, this is not a trial. They're just trying to get to the root of things and figure out what in the world, when we report to Caesar, this man is accused of. So verse 27, for it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. So he's just saying, look, what we're going to do here in the next lesson, in the next chapter, is we're just going to figure out what in the world Paul did. So when we send a report to Rome, you know, we've got the facts right. So there we go. That sets us up for chapter 26, and which is actual Paul's kind of testimony and his interaction with Agrippa and Festus, and then finally, you know, basically judgment being passed and him being sent to Rome. Not to give away anything, I hope you already knew that, but we will deal with that in the next lesson. I think we've pretty much covered chapter 25 for the time being. I appreciate you listening today once again. For more resources, check out BaptistBasics.org. Hopefully, we'll get the rest of these out in a very quick fashion and get moved on to our next series. But I appreciate you listening to these. Hope they're helping a blessing to you. And I'm Matthew Gage, and I will see you next time.